The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent
sports columnists.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us again on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we will be joined at World Series time by the best baseball man I know. He was recently the manager of the Orioles. He has managed the Yankees, the Diamondbacks, and the Rangers, and has a lifetime of knowledge and stories and analysis about baseball. He is Buck Showalter. But before we get started with Buck, I want to tell you about Upstart. Upstart has revolutionized how we borrow money by going beyond the traditional FICO score to offer personal loans, taking into account factors like job experience and education when determining your interest rate. Checking your Upstart rate is free and has no effect on your credit score. Your Upstart rate check takes just 2 minutes, and if you are approved, you can get your funds as soon as the next business day. They make it quick and they make it easy. The path to financial freedom can look awfully bleak when you have high interest debt. And if your FICO score isn't great, it can make breaking out of that revolving debt cycle harder than it needs to be. Thankfully, our sponsor Upstart is revolutionizing the process of personal lending. You have to check them out. Hurry to upstart.com/Lupica to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Lupica. Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast, and we are taping this podcast on the eve of Game 1 of the 2018 World Series, and we are lucky enough to be joined by the best baseball man I know, one who just went through an impossibly difficult season with his former team, the Baltimore Orioles. He has managed the Yankees, he's managed the Arizona Diamondbacks, he's managed the Texas Rangers, and he finally engaged in one of the great culture changes in recent baseball history with the Orioles before the ceiling fell in on them this year. Buck Showalter is our guest today. Hey, Buck.
Mike, how are we doing today?
Well, I'm fine, and there's so much to talk. We'll get to what this season was like for you, but, you know, we are...
Let's don't get to that.
Well, I talked to you enough during the season, but it was really kind of biblical what happened. But let's start with the World Series. And as we were getting ready to do this today, I pointed out to Buck that the Red Sox and the Dodgers haven't faced each other in a World Series since over 100 years ago when the Dodgers weren't even the Dodgers. They were called the Brooklyn Robins. And Buck, with two iconic organizations and teams and names, it seems almost impossible that the Red Sox and Dodgers have never faced each other in the World Series.
It makes for a great storyline. You know, I know the two teams probably aren't real happy about it because of the travel alone. That's something that people probably not talking about, but it's going to play a big part in this. And actually, your traveling secretary and his abilities are very big this time of year, believe it or not. His abilities to think about this, they don't have these rooms and these hotels. They don't know they're going to be in Boston. They're going to be in L.A. Like you do when you get a schedule to start the season. There's so many sidebars to playoffs and things. And, you know, the league helps you a little bit, but you're kind of on your own to kind of make your way through this. And, you know, you're one plain mechanical failure from really putting your team in harm's way. So it's a but it is hard to imagine these two teams haven't, you know, Mike, you and I have talked about this. I think eventually they're going to do like the ABA and the AFL did, and they're going to throw out the American League, National League, and get everybody under one roof to get the schedule right. And I think a lot of people on the field really hope they do that one day.
We're talking to Buck Showalter on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Buck, there's so many interesting side bars to this series. One is Fenway's the oldest ballpark we have. And I think people are surprised, Buck, when I point out, as I did in the column the other day, Dodger Stadium has quietly become the third oldest ballpark in the sport. Isn't that amazing?
Mike, you know, you're getting old when places you remember as being new stadiums are being torn down. Now, think about that. You remember when these things, some of these places opened new, and now they're being torn down and going to another place. But, you know, they've done a great job in L.A. of keeping it. You know, they finally updated the visiting locker room, which was quite a – and they're trying to do as much as they can in Boston. Believe me, the people that go there and play don't take it as America's most beloved ballpark, believe me.
Buck,
it's a tough place for a visiting team. You know, the Dodgers travel heavy. You know, I talked to a lot of the clubbies, and certain teams travel real heavy. They have extra masseuses. They have extra trainers. They have extra this, extra that. And there's just so much room in a locker room. And actually, the only person that's got a little room to move around is the manager. It's one of the few visiting locker rooms where you don't have a bathroom. You know, you have a shower, and that's about it. So it's a challenge going in there with a big group of people. I know Boston travels real heavy.
Buck, I was up at Fenway for the Yankees Red Sox series. And I was looking at the visiting clubhouse roof or ceiling one day, and Aaron Judge is standing there, and I'm standing with Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe, and we're looking at Judge, and we're looking at the ceiling, and I said, "Do you think there's 18 inches between the top of his head and the ceiling?" And Shaughnessy said, "No way." He said, "Maybe 14 inches." But it is, well, I know the ballpark is small, but that room is incredibly small.
It is. And it's gotten, you know, they've done about everything. You know, Dave Dombrowski's done a good job in there. They used to make it such a home field advantage. I think MLB's kind of got involved in trying to make it a little bit more livable. But they, you know, they try to do everything the facility allows them to do. And it's a tough place to play. You know, it's a tough place physically because there's a lot of places where you can get hurt there. You know, the safety factor of the park is a challenge with the wall in left field and some of the crooks and crannies. It's really a home field advantage. I mean, they've got one of the big advantages at home is that they've got Mookie Betts in right field. I mean, there's nobody that covers that place. He's such an advantage at home games playing right field because he plays that right field like nobody I've ever seen there.
Buck, have you ever seen, I have been searching my memory. Have you ever seen a better defensive outfield than Benintendi, Bradley, and Betts, the killer bees for the Red Sox?
You know, Mike, I'm not one of those guys that says, "Oh, it's the greatest ever, this and that, whatever." But I tell you what, you'd be hard-pressed to come up with. And what so many people, it seems like they seem to miss in the game. They're so involved in just the pure offensive analytics. And, you know, it's still a moving target trying to get the analytics to be trustworthy defensively because so many times your eyes don't match up with some of the numbers that you're getting. And especially you get around Gold Glove time and you see some of the zone ratings and stuff, but that group meets the eye test, you know. And the thing about it, Bradley throws real well. They play off of each other. You can tell there's a certain communication because in the playoffs, the bigger the crowds get, and they're always playing in big crowds, being able to communicate on the field verbally doesn't play. There's too much noise. You know, you've got to have a feel for each other. You got to know. Just know each other. And that's what happens when you stay healthy and you play together for a long period of time. You can cultivate a lot of those things. And you can tell these three guys function together very well.
We're talking to Buck Showalter, who, despite the record this year, I still think is as good a manager as there is in baseball. Okay, Buck, let's talk about the managers for a second. And you obviously saw a lot more of the Red Sox this year than you did the Los Angeles Dodgers. But we were talking the other day, and you were one of the things that you said you liked about Cora is that obviously he embraces analytics like every other modern manager does. But so many of the big decisions he has made just in the postseason have been more people decision than statistical decisions.
Well, yeah, and knowing your players, there's an old saying, never be careful about telling truths that hurt innocent people. Mike, there's certain type of guys, you know, that Joey and Dave have done a great job of playing a good hand well. And that's hard to do. So many people, you know, sometimes it's easier to be the little engine that could and David trying to slay Goliath. Sometimes that mentality is a little bit easier to rally around. But when I have such great respect for coaches, managers, organizations that win when they're expected to win. you know, whether it's an Alabama, whether it's New England Patriots, whether it's a Yankee Red Sox, or, you know, obviously these two teams went in. They had the two highest payrolls in baseball, I think, or close to it.
You know, two of the top three. It's one and three.
Yeah. Which is, you know, we can get into that, but who cares at this time of year? But, you know, that's really hard. That mindset of perfection being expected, you're supposed to win. There's a certain leadership that you have to have, and, you know, not be too tough on it and trust the talent, because talent plays. Believe me, there are nights when the Red Sox will just overpower you talent-wise. They just – it all clicks. And there's nights when they're vulnerable, when a starting pitcher doesn't do well, or you might catch them a certain time of the year. But they've been so consistent. And, you know, I told Brian Butterfield a long time ago, their third base coach for years, he's coached third base for the Cubs. I was in the Arizona Fall League, and there's this kid. During lunch, I went out to see our kids in Baltimore, and we had a team that had some of the Red Sox players on. There was a second baseman named Mookie Betts. You know, they'd taken BP and everything. I came in and struck up a conversation with him, very easy too, in the lunchroom or something. Started talking to this guy for about half an hour. And I went, picked up my phone, called Brian Butterfield. Butter, you know this guy named Mookie Betts? He goes, no, I've heard he's a pretty good player. I said, you might want to get to know him. I haven't seen him play yet, but he's got the other stuff down. He's the rest of it, he's going to be real good at. And I'm pretty sure he's probably a pretty good player if he's out here. He, you know, it's just, there's just so many ways that they can beat you.
Buck, I don't think I've ever asked you this, but I will ask you now, what do you think about the one league having the DH and the other league not having the DH, to the point where a guy that you called the best right fielder you've ever seen with your own eyes, Mookie Betts, when the series goes to Los Angeles, is probably going to have to play second base?
Well, I'm not going to make a strong case for the DH or not the DH. I just think we're at a point where we should all be playing underneath the same rules. What other sport does that?
Right.
You know, really. I mean, it's not exactly entertainment to me to watch pitchers hit. Now, if your pitchers are better hitters, they should be able to have that advantage at home. You know, the double switch is not brain surgery, okay? It's nothing that, you know, you're down four runs and your pitcher's going to hit the sixth inning, and you're going to hit for him. Right. I mean, but, and having versatile teams. But the American League team's at a distinct disadvantage going to National League rules. You know, every National League team that comes in to play us during the interleague play managers would always say, this is great. I got a guy I want to DH. I got a guy that's a little nicked up. I got a guy that, you know, so, you know, whether they do it or don't, just grandfathered in or out, and let's get everybody on the same playing rules. It really, and, you know, you're going to have to go through the union, but there's a way to do it. And I don't really think the fans at the end of the day say, boy, I'm going to this game tonight at Dodger Stadium because I get to see the pitcher hit four times. I don't think so. But, you know, can you imagine? But they're lucky because J.D. Martinez is a pretty good outfielder. He's not as good as Mookie. But you got to have both those guys in the lineup, and they will. And that puts him at a little disadvantage to some extent. But Alex did a great job of playing JD a lot in the outfield. So this isn't like taking, Big Poppy and putting him at first base in the middle of a World Series.
We're talking to Buck Showalter on the Mike Lupica podcast. Let's talk about JD for a second. Buck, 4.5 years ago, this young man was DFA, designated for assignment by the Houston Astros. Now, I consider the Astros one of the smartest operations in baseball. I think Jeff Luhnow is one of the smartest baseball men around. And that's
Mike, let me say this. With that being said, though, if you take a look at how their club was put together, a lot of those picks were first five picks in the country from being bad for a long time. Yeah, right. They picked Correa. They picked different
Altuve.
Guys
yeah,
early
Altuve.
In the pick. So, you know, in order to make those picks in the first two or three picks, you've got to be real bad for an extended period of time. So they've done a great job of evaluating that. But with that being said, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, you know, you can be nobody knows everything. Okay. My friend Bill Goldman, who wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and The Princess Bride, has a great line in a book he wrote about Hollywood. And the line is, nobody knows anything. Meaning some of the guys who have made the biggest blockbusters in history have also made some of the worst bombs in history. So it happens to everybody. It happens in sports. And I just want to talk about what happened to JD. He, the spring he got released, Buck, he couldn't get on the field, okay? He couldn't get on the field for the Houston. Bo Porter was the manager then. He got 18 at-bats, and he kept telling them, you know, I made some changes over the winter, and they didn't want to listen. They sent out a thing to 30 other teams saying, hey, we will, you can have J.D. Martinez for very little compensation, and crickets, as I was told. And I can't remember many stories like this where the guy became what J.D. has become.
Well, Mike, it's a great lesson to all of us. A lot of guys evolve. You know, they figure it out at a certain time if their makeup allows them to figure it out. Some guys never, you know, I don't know, not hit bottom, but they don't realize, okay, I've got to do something different. You know, I've got to try something else. I got to know who I am and who I'm not. You know, the two biggest moves the Red Sox made for me is, one, signing J.D. Martinez. We brought their whole lineup together. And people forget. It seems like nobody talks about it. Releasing Hanley Ramirez was big for their club. It made everything fit then. It fit who they wanted to be and how they wanted to play the game. It allowed them to be better defensively. It allowed their clubhouse to flow better. And those two moves, I mean, Martinez, he's a beast. And you know, what you do with them is you pick your poison. But what's fascinating for me in the World Series is that you've got these two groups that are playing each other that don't have a whole lot of familiarity with each other's pitchers. And right. You don't see that much. This is kind of a true, almost the way it used to be years ago. All of a sudden you're facing Bob Gibson or Sandy Koufax or whoever, and you haven't seen them. You don't even know what they feature. So there's a little bit of advantage for a Chris Sale and a David Price and for all these pitchers on both clubs because they haven't seen these pitchers before. And there's a period they go through that hitters have to figure them out. A videotape and scouting reports really doesn't play that much. You have to visually see what the presentation, the release point, everything that goes into it. There's no way to simulate that without getting in the box against them.
Talking to Buck Showalter, my old friend on the Mike Lupica podcast. Buck, I you know, having been around sports as long as I have, I always make a distinction when I talk about character. And I say there's a difference between athletic character and the character you show in your life. But athletic character is a real thing, too. And, Buck, I was just wondering how you felt and how saw what David Price did in that closeout game against Verlander in the Astros, because everybody in the world thought it was one of the great postseason pitching mismatches of all time, except Price that night, with his record in the postseason, goes out and pitches the game of his life.
It's why we play the games, Mike. It's why everybody loves sports. Here's something on paper, analytically, or whatever, this shouldn't play. And then all of a sudden, it does. You know, and you go, you know, someone says, where does that come from? But when you, I guarantee you the people in the clubhouse in Boston weren't surprised by it. I mean, when you know the heart of a guy and what has allowed them to be good for a long period of time, they don't say, okay, this happened last time, so it means this bad is going to happen again. They don't live in that world, and they're different. These guys have and you search for that as an evaluator, that person that doesn't get involved in some tendency that's going to play long-term. You know, sports is about good times and bad times, shortening the bad ones, stringing out the good ones, and then you end up with a good season. And you're trying to shorten that. And, you know, David Price is so much more of a pitcher than people give him credit for now, especially. You know, the changeup, the cutter that he's really evolved to, that's allowed him to survive during the season when you're not carrying 96, 97. You know, I guarantee he came out of the bullpen. He knew he was carrying a little more fastball. He knew he had a pretty good feel for where the ball was going that night. And, you know, this guy would go and throw less than 50% fastball some nights. And it depends on how you're going to define a fastball with a cutter. But he's got a lot of ways to get you out, and he's not afraid to pitch inside. Now, what he does not like in the American League East will make you fearful of the barrel of the bat in the strike zone. You know, it really will. It will make guys pick around the zone, and especially when they're not carrying stuff. And guys mentally know that they're not physically there all the way. I mean, out of 30, 35 starts, you may feel like you're carrying everything physically and stuff-wise, maybe 7 to 10 of them tops, the good pitchers. The rest of them is what defines you. It's what allows you to survive. It's what you can do at the baseball. And one thing David Price has always had, he's had a real talented hand and a real talented fingers. He can manipulate the baseball in the zone.
Buck, we have had this conversation for a long time, and you were the person who says that aces, the true ace in baseball, that you can't always evaluate them statistically, but you know one when you see one, okay? When he has been healthy, Chris Sale has been absolutely that for the Red Sox since they got him from the White Sox. But I happened to be, I was up there in September when you were in Boston, and when he pitched that game against you, what did you see from him that night when he came out throwing the ball 89, 90, 91 on a night when they thought he was going to be getting himself ready for the playoffs and get ready to gas somebody again?
He was. And I came out of it and said, boy, I hope somebody's not counting that as what they're going to see the next time out. He needed a hook. You know, he just, it wasn't, you know, they were who they were. And even though he may have been trying to dial up a little bit more, and I'm sure they were worried about what they were going to get, nobody can say that for sure. I came out of it saying, if this guy's healthy, don't think that he's not going to go to another level next time out when they need him. I really felt that way. I watched him pitch. His arm was working fine. He just, you know, it was like, okay, I got to get through these 5 innings and throw X number of pitches, and I'll be ready and this and that, whatever. You know, I'd like the results to be good, and I'd like for everybody not to ask me after the game how hard I'm throwing or this and that, whatever. But, you know, my end game is down the road, not tonight here against Baltimore. And that's the way I felt after it was over. I said, I wish I had that problem.
Buck, let's just stay with him for a second, because I just love his makeup. I know people have always worried about that three-quarter motion of his. I love his attitude. I love his approach. And
Mike, you should see some. I pull up old reports on him coming out of college, even some high school stuff. And, you know, rightfully so. But there are exceptions to every rule. When I had Randy Johnson, I had to throw out the book on him that 100 pitches or 120 – I mean, Randy was different, and good managers, and I think Alex realizes this, those guys are different. You can't manage them like you manage somebody that's a fourth or fifth starter. Guys like Chris Sale are just different, and you let the other team tell you how he's doing instead of some number on a scoreboard.
Buck, when you watched whatever you've watched of the playoffs, what do you make of the way you talk about different animals? Obviously, closers are different animals. What have you made of the way that Craig Kimbrel has struggled? And what is your reaction to the way Alex Cora has basically stayed with him and said, you know what, he's my guy?
To a point, because he got it done at the end of the day. But, you know, this is scramble on the run. I mean, it's not like during the season where I guarantee if he gives it up once or twice, he'll do something different. You know, this isn't that time to worry. Well, you know, and I think Alex will do that. You can do so many things, Mike. I've said it a lot of, you know, you manage four ways during a season. One, in the spring training, you manage a certain way. During the regular season, you manage a certain way. In this god-awful thing, September call-up baseball, you manage another way. And in the playoffs, you manage another way. And the sense of urgency, I mean, believe me, you go from one-game playoff to five-game playoff to seven-game playoffs, each series is different. And you've got to be able to grasp that. And nobody analytically can tell you about that. There's so many things that happen on the field during the course of this that requires a feel for it. And if you're sitting there going, boy, I better do this because I'm going to get asked a question if I don't, you got to trust yourself on that because you know the pulse of what's going on in that clubhouse. And you can't look at it like there's some game you're going to win at the end of the day. Hey, we got beat, but I did everything analytically correct. That's not going to fly. It's about who won and who lost.
Buck Showalter is our guest on the Mike Lubica podcast. More with Buck after I tell you about my good friends at Peter Manning Clothing. If you're tired of wearing baggy, oversized clothes, never finding your size, or having to take everything to the tailor, then I beseech you to check out Peter Manning NYC. Peter Manning has developed a fresh line of apparel specifically designed for us not-so-tall guys. Pants shouldn't bunch up at your ankles, shirts shouldn't hang down to your knees, and jackets shouldn't wear like a tent. You'll feel good and look great wearing proper-fitting clothes. They guarantee it. It's changed thousands of lives, and it'll change yours, too. No more baggy pants, no more pirate arms, and no more tailor tacks. Visit them online at www.petermanningnyc.com. Be sure to use the promo code LUPICA for 20% 20% off your order, or check them out in Manhattan as I did at 933 Broadway and discover a great fit. I've gone there. My son has gone there. We love it. This is an honest and heartfelt recommendation. www.petermanningnyc.com. Be sure to use code LUPICA for 20% off your order. Buck, until Manny Machado got traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers this year, you had managed every game this young man had played in the big leagues. And you probably noticed, Buck, people barely know he's in the stadium or on the field. He's made no headlines. He's caused no controversies. He's just quietly doing his business.
Yeah. You know, he's a talented kid. He's a special. Somebody told me the other day they nicknamed him Snow Leopard because he was a rare breed. I hadn't heard that one. They said it was in Baltimore. I said, I never heard that one in the clubhouse. But, you know, I've known Manny since he was just a puppy. And I remember sneaking over to Bowie and sneaking over to Frederick and sneaking over to Aberdeen to watch him and John Scope play and going, wow, this got a chance to be pretty good. And I'm happy for him. It's been... You know, people that think that he's going to be intimidated by everything that goes on at Fenway Park haven't been watching. I think sometimes he almost relishes that role a little bit. It's not something he goes out and seeks, but, you know, he's driven to prove people wrong sometimes. And, you know, there's some stuff self-inflicted. You know, I've had many talks with him, you know, when something.
That's what I was going to ask you. Were there many talks or Okay.
Yeah, of course there were. They, you know, because you're trying to keep them from stepping on their tail, and you see where something's headed. And sometimes you just got to let them experience it, and before you can get their attention. But you know, Manny does so many things well, and you know, believe me, I have a lot of private thoughts about it. I know him well, and he's not a malicious guy. But sometimes he does something on the field that's really hard to defend, and he's your player, he's your teammate, and you're trying to. But every once in a while, you want to go, hey, man, you got to give me a little something to run with here because that's pretty hard to defend. The only thing we really, you know, the thing at first base the other day, there's, believe me, if Manny had to do over again, he wish it wouldn't have happened that way. But, you know, he's not going to run away from it. You know, if Chris, you know, take a look at the track record when people tried to, and I don't want to say intimidate, but get involved where they could see if they could do something physically to make him cave in. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. For every time you see somebody throw at him or do something, watch the reaction and you'll get an idea of what he's got a chance to be about in these playoffs.
Buck, one of the things, forget the offense that the young man obviously provides. One of the things you have always talked about and the thing that you said that you were so often in awe of was his arm. The throws he can make, from the angles he can make, from the places on the field where he makes them, right?
Mike, it's the velocity he can create without any momentum towards the target. That's what's unusual. You know, one reason we had to go in and tack down his two knees, nothing major, but was because he's so loose-jointed, his shoulders, his elbows, his knees, his hips, that he can create this unbelievable torque with his arm when he's moving away from a target. And that's what made him so good at third base and makes him pretty good at shortstop. And it's just he can create such arm speed without any momentum moving towards the target. And that's what separates him from so many guys.
Is he a shortstop or a third baseman, Buck, in your opinion?
Yes. Hey, completely impactful, just purely. If he's totally engaged in the position, and he's more impactful as a third baseman. But, you know, when you compare him to that at shortstop, he's going to do some things at shortstop that maybe other people can't do because of his arm strength. But the total engagement and all sides of the game, I just, you know, if I had a choice, I would have played him at third base. But, you know, I also was trying to keep his value up as much as possible because I knew we were probably going to have to trade him before it was over. And he had the most valuable value for us if we showed that he could play short and third. And he really, really wants to play shortstop in a perfect world.
Buck, when you look at the Dodgers, and obviously you've been in the meat grinder that is the American League East with the Red Sox for a long time, and that became a really passionate and interesting and compelling rivalry. How much have you seen of Kershaw across his career?
Enough. I saw him face my son in high school here in Dallas. And my son's claim to fame is I think he put him in play or either walked off of him. he was at Highland Park, and I'm telling you, it was pretty special. I did, you know, Mike, a compliment I paid some very few pitchers, but him. He's a baseball player who happens to be a pitcher, not a pitcher who happens to be a baseball player. You know, you feel like he's a guy, if you're choosing up sides and coaches are throwing, he's still going to get picked to play somewhere because he's a winning person, a winning player. You can just tell his body language, his interaction with his teammates. He wants his team to win the game, whether he's directly involved with it or not. You watch his intensity offensively instead of going, okay, I'm a pitcher, let me get this at bat out of the way. No, I'm going to try to do something positive up here. He's a pleasure to watch play. I enjoy watching him compete other than pitching. Fill the ball, back up a base, get a bunt down, hit and run. He is a baseball player, and there's a reason why success follows guys like him around. He makes his teammates better. When he's pitching, they go, boy, we got Kershaw going today, and he's going to be competing, and I got to bring it too because I don't want to let him down.
Oh, Buck, there's no way that they're playing in the World Series if Kershaw doesn't go out and pitch the way he did in Game 5 against the Brewers.
Yeah, and nobody's – Mike, this time of year, nobody's 100%. You'll be 100% about 2 days before spring training starts. And so, you know, it's who is performing better at 80 or 90% or whatever. And we all know how left-handed – if not, look it up – how left-handed pitchers pitch in Fenway Park. And right. A lot of it's got to do with the hitting background. That's another thing, Mike. It'd be interesting to see what they do with the hitting background when the left-handers pitch. Left-handed starters in Fenway Park have been good. A lot of it's got to do. It's really hard to see the ball there, especially if they sell those seats out in center field.
Go back for a second. So the first time you saw Clayton Kershaw pitch, he was in how old? He was in high school?
Yep. I got to sneak out there and watch my son, and he was playing against Highland Park. Pretty sure that's right. I hope nobody fact-checks me and I'm wrong, but I'm almost positive. Nathan talks about it anyway.
He
was a man playing against children, Mike. Okay.
Oh, he was.
It was a man against children. It was like if somebody said, hey, this guy might be a first-round pick, I'd go, no, you know what? No kidding. Hey, it didn't take John Super Scout to understand that he was going to go early.
When you look at the Dodgers, Buck, one of my favorite players, and I got to see him play for the Mets, and I just didn't see the guy that he's become in L.A. coming, is Justin Turner, who has become a huge presence on that baseball team.
Mike, you know, you talk about Martinez, J.D. Martinez. Turner's taken a similar path, too. You know, we had him in Baltimore before I got there, and he was passed around. There's two or three other clubs. And he kind of figured it out. And the guys that are willing to go to winter ball, and the guys who it means a lot to, the Steve Pierces of the world, they keep grinding it. They keep tinkering. They go, okay, let me try this. Let me try that. They don't have any ego. They get their ego taken out of it. J.D. Martinez is asking, 30 teams, give me a chance. Justin Turner, Steve Pierce. That's why there's such interesting stories, because you've got to have those guys, and more important, you've got to have people that can evaluate that tool. You know, we have more things available to us to evaluate players than ever before, but it seems like more mistakes are being made on player evaluation because, we're starting to do away with people and organizations that can evaluate that sixth tool. You know, somebody fought the fight for Justin Turner. Somebody said, we got to have J.D. Martinez in Detroit or wherever. We've got to go give Steve Pierce a chance in Baltimore. You know, I remember how we ended up with Steve, and what was said to me by somebody that I respected about the makeup part of it. And it plays this time of year. It really plays in American League East. You've got to, if you're weak of mind and weak of spirit, you're going to get exposed in American League East.
Buck, you were talking about why they play the games and why we love sports. Okay. And you just brought up a name. And Steve Pierce has become such a valuable member of the Boston Red Sox. Buck, you can go back and look at the last play. Huh?
He fits them. He fits, who are you? What are you trying to be? And that's what we lost somewhat in Baltimore is, no one, we would see a player and go, that guy would fit us, how we have to play, how we have to be, and how, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going to ask?
No, and I was going to say, and his position is baseball player. I don't think first base is his best position, but the beauty of baseball and the beauty of sports, the last play of the Yankees Red Sox series. Yeah, okay. Eduardo Nunez, he has no real position. Okay. He makes a play he can't make on the ball, and he makes a throw to Steve Pierce. And Buck, you could pick any first baseman in baseball, any natural first baseman who's played the position his whole life, who couldn't make a better catch and keep the foot on the bag than he did in that moment.
And Mike, anybody that's been around Steve doesn't surprise him at all. Did you see his eyeballs as the ball's coming over? And they did it in slow motion. But Steve would rather get the job done than look aesthetically pleasing. Wait a minute, I'm not going to look cool if I look out of control and I dive and I barely catch it and this, whatever. It looks choppy. It doesn't look real smooth. And Steve don't care what it looks like. He's trying to make sure that his team has more runs than the other team after 27 outs. And, you know, he was like that at South Carolina, talking to his coach there, talking to his minor league guys. You know, one night I said, hey, we're really bound up here, Steve. You ever played second base? He goes, I will tonight. You know, he went out and took balls, turned two double plays, played second base. What do you need? What does the team need me to do? And when you're trying to cultivate that type of mentality on your club, even though you have a lot of payroll, what separates you is the Pearsons, the Holtz, the Nunez's. You know, that was a big sign for them to get a utility guy. Nunez played a lot of big roles for them. They want to give a third baseman's hurt, somebody a time off. I mean, when I look at the Red Sox, I think about Holt, I think about Pierce, I think about Nunez, I think about two catchers that either one of them can catch. I think about all the pieces that fit. And I'm not that familiar with the Dodgers, but I guarantee it's very similar. And because you don't go through a season without counting on some of those what-if players.
Buck, when you look back on the play that Ben Attendee made at the end of that amazing game between the Red Sox and the Astros, again, and it's another way of talking about why we love sports. If he doesn't make that catch, they lose that game because he's good. That ball's going to go past him and it's going to clear the bases. And maybe the Red Sox don't win the series. But in that moment, he wasn't thinking risk, reward, or anything. He was just going to lay out and make a play.
You know, Michael, one of the things that was kind of in his favor is because both those ballparks have a real funky left field short. You know, he's got a feel for how far he can go. I guarantee that was a pretty easy position for him. Very hard play, especially going away from your glove side. You know, his extra range is usually glove side towards the line.
Right.
And that was a play that you committed to. It's almost you're managing the game. Hey, I know if this ball gets down, we got an issue. So I'm going to make sure I give myself every chance. And if it's a 50-50 shot, it's worth taking this risk. You know, there's times when you don't risk that play, and there's times when you do risk that play. And it was big, obviously. But you could tell he was committed to making that play instead of going, okay, I'm not supposed to make this play if it falls. It was, my team needs me to make this play.
And, Buck, the ironic thing about the game is Josh Reddick had made pretty much the same play with the bases loaded in the top of the inning to save the game at the time for the Astros.
Mike, and I can't speak to the National League part of it, but think about what you're saying. All these teams that were playing, you know, we had 19 players playing in the postseason that played in Baltimore the last 4 or 5 years, 6 years. All right, somebody count them up and send it to me, 19 players. And the thing that hit me again is how good defensively these teams are. They're playing this time of year.
Right.
You know, when people hit the baseball and it doesn't leave the park, you've got to either catch it or you've got to turn two outs with one play. You know, as much strikeouts as many strikeouts as there are and many balls are leaving the ballpark, when it stays in the park, I think more so than any time, the importance of defense and being able to evaluate it is catamount. That's the word, catamount? Close enough.
Hey, Buck.
Paramount. Let's try paramount.
We're talking to Buck Showalter on the Mike Lubega podcast. Buck, you were at the very beginning of our conversation today. We're talking about how, you know, that the these teams really don't know a lot about each other except that what they're going to look at on film and all that stuff. Okay.
I find that fascinating. Yeah, you know, I do. It's not like the Nationals are playing the Orioles or the Yankees are playing the Mets where it seems like they play 10 times during the year. This is an interesting matchup.
And so when you look at these two teams and you see the way that they're made up, do you think people will become any more aware of how different these two leagues are? Because you talk to me all the time
I hope so.
About
I hope
the
so.
grind of just your former division, the American League East, okay? And you talk about teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox who can, in your words, extend the grind, okay? Yeah. And are the Dodgers going to be, now that they got to play 5 or 6 or 7 games against the Red Sox, are they going to see it with their own eyes?
I don't think so, Mike. In a short series, it doesn't matter that the American League's better than the National League. Anybody, I mean, just about anybody, just having the DH alone. And you cut your teeth as a pitcher in American League East. There's a reason why Wade Miley, you know, I could tell you 10 guys, they go to another league. It's just, you know, and you have to sometimes overpay pitchers to get them to come to the American League East. Hey, everybody, every league is tough. Every division is tough. I just know it's the only division that has two astroturf. The only two astroturf fields left in baseball are in that division. It's the hardest division to coach third base because you got Fenway Park, left field, right field. You got Yankee Stadium, right field, left field. You got two astroturf fields. Then you go to our place, which is another dynamic altogether. You know, we don't even talk about having to cross the border into Toronto back and forth. What a problem that is for a lot of clubs going back and forth and for Toronto. I mean, you cut your teeth in that division, but I think in a 7-game series, Mike, it doesn't really, you know, I can tell you more likely who's going to win the All-Star game. I mean, if you didn't look at the two lineups in the All-Star game and realize there's a difference in the two leagues, then you're just kidding yourself. But in a series like 7 games, one league being better than another is not going to play into it. It really isn't. Mike, here's a shocker. It's going to be who pitches the best.
We're talking with the great Buck Showalter on the Mike Lubica podcast. More with Mr. Showalter in a minute. But first, a word from our friends at Geico. There's a quick way you could save money to switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about a homeowner's or renter's insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. Talking to Buck Showalter on the Mike Lubica podcast. So let's talk about pitching for a minute, Buck. And I don't want you to talk about this manager or that manager or the idea that, you know, relief pitchers can now start games and all that opener stuff, okay? Do you think that this parade, this constant parade of relief pitchers is actually good for the sport?
Mike, to try to make too much of it, I mean, it's something that's been shown. It's kind of like the stuff they called Moneyball. Well, that was proven to be wrong, okay? It was more of a Hollywood script. I mean, believe me, Oakland doesn't follow that script anymore. There's a reason why it's proven, you know, you can't take until you hit. I mean, you know, they're stealing, but they're doing things in Oakland that's completely away from that. So, you know, it was a nice movie and this and that was been proven. That. So, yeah, Mike, it's, you know, everybody would like, you know, you don't think Tampa would like to have Blake Snell starting 5 days in a row, you know, so you got to start about what's driving it. It's the lack of starting pitching. Okay. But you better have, but doing it during the regular season, you better have an optional bullpen. You know, what people are taking advantage of that nobody talks about much is a 10-day DL as opposed to the 15-day DL. I mean, they're almost using that like a taxi squad, some of these places, because you can't put that type of workload on bullpen guys and not pay a price. So you've got to be, you know, very deep. I mean, your Triple A team's an extension of your major league pitching staff, but you're looking for different types of guys now. I mean, if you look at a lot of these teams have, I call them neutral split guys. They don't necessarily get left-handers out better or right-handers out better. Tampa has a lot of neutral split guys. They also have a lot of traditional, strong traditional that you know that Romo is going to be a good right-on-right guy. So the way they're put together, if you're going to do that, you better have an optimal bullpen. It's like they talk about a lot about pitchers. When this guy's out of options, he's not going to have much value. You know, they end up over in Japan or Korea. You know, I've seen that happen a lot with guys. So, you know, there's a dynamic to it that you better be more than just these 12 guys you break camp with. You know, you're getting ready to see the start of a 13-man pitching staff. And what it's going to do is it's going to put so much importance on the utility player like Nunez, like Holt, guys that can play everywhere because you got to carry a catcher, an extra outfielder, and that infield, that you got to have one guy that can play anywhere and do well. So you're going to see that role. A lot of teams are starting to try to develop that role, and that guy's value is going to go up more and more as these bullpen games come into play. But there's a price to pay for that over a full season, and no one has really been able to to say for sure that you're going to be able to do it over a full season, and how many starting pitchers are you going to be able to have to survive?
Buck, we're talking Buck Showalter on the Mike Lubega podcast. You know, it was so interesting watching the Astros this October as opposed to last October. And I like A.J. Hinch. I've gotten to know him. Where we live in Florida, I can be at the new ballpark, ballpark of the Palm Beaches, in about 20 minutes. So it's really fun for me in spring training. Okay. But just about everything he did with his pitchers, starters and relievers, worked last October. And mm-hmm. this time, whether it was Charlie Morton or Verlander pitching the same kind of match point against game he pitched against the Yankees in Game 6 last year, it was a different year. And again, the script gets – it doesn't just get flipped from year to year in sports. It gets flipped from day to day.
But, Mike, you know, it worked great until the last series. It didn't quite always work out. And that's what's so heartless about the sport sometimes. You can have these great years and all of a sudden, it's abrupt. It get pulled out from underneath you. I mean, we were having a great year in Baltimore, 14. I mean, everything was falling for us. You know, we beat 3 Cy Young Award winners with Detroit to get. And all of a sudden, about after game 2 or so against Kansas City, I mean, they were hitting ground balls. They were hitting the bags. The ball pop-ups getting lost in the sun. Every line drive we hit was right at somebody. And I turned to my bench coach and said, you know, I don't know if the baseball guys are going to let this happen. I mean, you realize that sometimes it's just the whole karma of the game, and it changes from series to series. You might see some team go crazy and win 4 games in a row. It's just there's such a snowball time. You've got these two great teams, really good teams, that are going to clash. And the curiosity is, okay, how's it going to play out? And the American League being better than the National League doesn't play this time of year. I mean, the Dodgers very easily could win 4 in a row. It's just who kind of gets that karma that they've already had going around them all year gets it going again. Because it's momentum is a strange thing, Mike. When it gets going, it's hard to flip around when you get this talented of athletes.
Buck, when you talk about how things can snowball at this time, you saw it in your American League Championship Series a few years ago against the Royals. You lost game 1, and all of a sudden they just became a locomotive.
Oh, there was none. Ned yesterday even talked about it. He said we chuckled about it in the dugout. Everything we did, I mean, you know, it just every little break, and that's okay. You know, it's not sour grapes. It's just you understand being around it that sometimes there's things, you know, you try to control the things you can't control, and then every once in a while you play a game, a series, or whatever, and you go, you know, I don't care what you did. That game, there was just a serial feel to it that it wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't going to happen. And, you know, you turn the page and move on. But unfortunately, it kept happening.
Buck, you know, I make no apologies or explanations. We've been friends for a long time. So I checked in with you time to time during the season. And I didn't say this to you as I watched you go through a 115 loss season. But to me, the way you carried yourself this year without complaint or without, oh, woe is me, was the way that I believe you think William Nathaniel Showalter II, your dad, the high school principal, would have expected you to behave.
Mike, you know, I appreciate that because I got to tell you, in a lot of ways, Roger McDowell and I were talking about towards the end of the year. The last month and a half was one of my prouder moments as far as, you know, every day you talk to the media twice a day and you try to go down and say, okay, here's a chance to bring something. I tell guys all the time, whether it be a coach, a manager, a clubhouse guy, what do you bring? You know, what do you bring every day? Players, you know, and you didn't hear a lot of stuff coming out of the clubhouse, and it was hard. It was hard. We had a lot of different dynamics going, making trades, Adam Jones, a lot of things going on. But, you know, you try to be consistent. You try to treat people like you like to be treated. You know, that golden rule works pretty good, Mike. And it's hard. But things that are easy, they don't, as someone said a long time ago, you know, jobs that are real easy don't pay very much. And I tried, you know, and that's making it a little too simple, but, you know, somebody working 5 days a week, 10-hour, 12-hour days, 6 days, you know, people don't want to hear it. Hear you complain about something that's going on or your lot in life. I mean, I always have been able, since I was first time in the big leagues, you realize how lucky you are every day. And the honor there is, and the privilege to be in one place for 8 and a half years or whatever it was in today's sports landscape and society, is rare. So I'm never going to lose sight of that, how lucky I was. I had some great memories in Baltimore. And whatever happened this last year and a third is never going to take away from that. I'm not going to, I mean, I have some personal thoughts and the dynamics of how everything happened. But you know what? I really want to dwell on being thankful for everything. We have a charity up there, Kids Peace, we've been doing for the last six, seven years. And I'm going up there. My wife left this morning. We're going to finish that off this year because it's a commitment. It's about being committed to, you know, I got Baltimore, they got me. And sometimes they need another voice. I understand that. I understand how it works. And, you know, it was an honor to be there and one that I will always cherish.
Buck, forget about the almost mind-numbing losing that went on. What was it like seeing some of these kids who you had watched come up, that you had watched become big league stars, go off, you know, not just Manny, you know, when I know that you were close to Jonathan Scope, for example, and what was it like watching those guys, you know, get off the Titanic this year and have a chance to go flourish someplace else?
It was tougher than it was good, but I also knew they were going to a better place. You know, it's almost like, you're almost giving up some, like adoption, I guess. You know, I don't know. It was like, you know, Kevin Gausman, whether it's a Zach Britton, a John Scope, a Manny Machado, I can go on and on. It seems like, but you knew it was going to happen. I actually felt it, the last third of the season the year before, it was going to be a challenge because, you know, for a lot of reasons without getting into. But I think the abruptness of it, you know, that's what happens like when you get eliminated in the playoffs or somebody just gets traded. But it's another thing that was self-inflicted. If we didn't want them to be traded and we didn't want all this other stuff, we should have played better and it wouldn't have happened. So it was self-inflicted. And, you know, it's part about being accountable. So, you know, I think they understood that. You know, I heard them talking out in the hallway at Yankee Stadium that one of them had been traded. I mean, I didn't find out about it until a couple of months still yet to be told about, but I knew they eventually got traded. But it was an interesting dynamic. It was tough afterwards. You know, we were just in survival mode the last month of the season because of the pitching challenges we had. And you're trying to put your best foot forward because there were a lot of people depending on you to be competitive because the games meant a lot to the people that we were playing. There was a certain integrity you had to have there.
I'm talking to my friend Buck Showalter on the Mike Lubica podcast. All right, a couple more things, Buck, because this thing with pitching and starting pitching in relievers, especially at this time of year, is so fascinating. I mean, I think at the start of the year, everybody would have looked at the Yankees and said, oh my God, they can go to their bullpen in the fourth inning or the third inning and win games. But except when they got in there against that meat grinder offense of the Boston Red Sox, it didn't work out so well that their starting pitchers did not show up in that divisional series.
Mike, and it's okay, this should fit here, this should fit there. When you have a long chain, the chances of that chain breaking are greater. You know, the longer the chain, you know, oh, we'll pitch this guy in the sixth inning, this guy in the seventh, this guy in the eighth. Wait a minute, that guy didn't get anybody out in the seventh inning. Now what are we going to do? You know, I'd ask our pitching coaches every night before we go out on the field, okay, this guy gets hit with a line drive, the second pitch of the game, what are we doing? And you got to answer that question the night before.
Yep.
You got people available. And, you know, you can't assume anything. You can't just say, okay, this is the way we're going to line. Because what happens, the only problem with some of the way games are played, if you script these games, when games are scripted and the game doesn't follow a script, that's when the manager has to come in to play. Because you've got to be able to wheel it. You've got to be able to say, what if? How do I get back on script? You know, because you're not dealing with a Seinfeld script. You're dealing with human beings. You're dealing with things that aren't as they appear on paper sometimes. Thank God they aren't. It'd be boring. So, you know, there's going to be some games here that aren't going to follow script. And your ability to think on the fly and be prepared for that and have your players prepared for that so it doesn't put them in an uncomfortable situation is going to be paramount. I got the word right now.
Now you got it. Hey, Buck, yeah. If you are not managing somewhere next season, after everything you have seen and done in baseball, how much will you miss when the calendar is on February 1st and, your last team was the Orioles, so you're not heading for the West Coast of Florida?
Mike, I don't know. Call me then. I can tell you, I've done it before. I tell you, it was one of the great times in my life. People thought I was sitting around going crazy. I got to see my son play his senior year in high school. I got to be the groundskeeper for his team, not the coach. You know, drug the field, painted the foul poles. And a lot of people who know me know how much I enjoyed that. But, you know, Mike, it's life. It is. You know, I got a grandson. We'll see. We'll see where life and baseball takes me. I'm not ever networking for a job that someone already has. It drives me crazy. And I hope every manager keeps their job. I hope every GM is prosperous. I'm not wishing bad will on anybody. We'll just see where life and baseball takes me. And I hope everybody, you're never going to hear me involved behind the scenes working on my next job.
Buck Showalter has been my friend since he was a coach with the New York Yankees. There is no better manager in baseball, whether he is currently managing or not. I think that if you're going to watch the World Series play out over the next 8 or 9 days, you have been given a pretty good tutorial on baseball, as usual, from Mr. Showalter. These are the kind of conversations I love to have. I am lucky enough to get guests like Buck who will take time out of their schedule to do this, continue to download this, continue to subscribe. And Buck, before I tell everybody I'll see him next week, thank you so much for doing this today.
Mike, thanks for having me. I'm on the move here. God bless you. Take care.
The great William Nathaniel Showalter on the Mike Lupica Podcast, and we will talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.